Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody. It is late on a Monday night. The Lakers just got their butts kicked by the Golden State Warriors. Today's show is going to be fairly short, not too sweet, obviously. The Lakers got demoed by Klay Thompson's 10 of 10 three-point shooting to start, NBA record-setting there. DeMarcus Cousins came out, and once again, the Warriors all-star team took care of business. It's probably not a great sign that they've already hit the ground running the way that they did, but whatever. I do have a couple notes. Look, for the most part, a loss like that, you just kind of throw it away. The Lakers are extremely shorthanded. The Warriors are extremely not shorthanded. So for the most part, like, there isn't much to actually glean from that type of a game. I do have a few notes that I'll get to here over the course of the show. It'll be, like I said, semi-short, and then we'll come back, and Pete and I are just going to have a little bit of fun tomorrow. I'm trying to think of a way to just be kind of goofy and not really focus on this specific space in the Lakers season, just because the Lakers have a couple days off. There isn't really much to talk about after a loss like this, so we're going to have some fun tomorrow. I'm going to try to have a little bit of fun here on tonight's show. I start, though, with the obvious, very, very obvious lack of point guard play in last night's game. And once again, and this has been something that has been a consistent theme over the course of the entire season, is that the Lakers have really struggled. Like, they have looked awful for the most part when they've tried to play without a point guard on the court. Alex Caruso came out and he played well in garbage time. I really would like to see Luke lean a little bit more on Caruso in situations like this. Fortunately, it seems like Rajon Rondo is going to be coming back for Thursday's game against the Minnesota Timberwolves. But I would like, here's how I'll put it. The Lakers don't have the personnel to make life easy enough on whoever is the de facto point guard in those lineups. So, like, for example, and I'll talk a little bit more about Ingram as the show goes along, but last year Ingram was able to work as the team's point guard when Lonzo Ball got hurt and Tyler Ennis was awful, because he had guys like Brook Lopez on the court who could step out and consistently knock down the three in pick and pop situations. He had another capable creator in Julius Randle that the Lakers could lean on from time to time and keep defenses on their toes. And, you know, for those who are wondering, like, hey, why isn't Ingram capable of playing point guard the way that he played last year? Like, you really have to look at the personnel around him. KCP is off and on, right? And that's who he is. Kyle Kuzma has either been super duper hot or ridiculously cold all year. For as great a shooter as you might think Kuzma is, or that you've been led to believe that Kuzma is, he's still shooting like 30% on three this year, or from three this year. And that includes his crazy couple performances that we've had over the last couple weeks. Beyond those guys, like, who do you comfortably feel like the Lakers can lean on there? Ivica Zubac? Like, he's going to be the guy who can help carry any kind of consistent scoring burden. JaVale McGee is recovering from pneumonia. Tyson Chandler is old. Like, the Lakers just don't have very many options here, and the offense is going to look awful no matter who runs it, whether it's Brandon Ingram or if it's Lance Stephenson. They don't have the pieces around them to make life easy enough on those guys who are expected to play those roles. So that's how I would put that. I'm going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, I want to talk about Kyle Kuzma, because I've noticed something in his game that it's a bad habit that I think needs to be broken as quickly as possible. We'll get to that here in a second. All right, so we will start here with Kyle Kuzma. On one hand, the Lakers desperately need a willing scorer, and he has tried to step into that role as best he can. He just isn't that player. Like, he might show flashes, and he's had a couple incredible games, and to a certain extent, he deserves credit for merely trying to step into a role that the Lakers desperately need. But he's not that player. And it would be stupid, frankly, to hope for any non-lottery second-year player to be able to step into that role on a team that has actual aspirations. So with that as context here to frame that conversation, I want to make clear that I'm not being overly hard on Kuzma for the sake of being overly hard on him. I've just noticed a trend in his game that I just don't think it works very well for development of him as a valuable NBA player. And it's that, you know, as soon as Kyle Kuzma shoots and makes a bucket, that the next time he touches the ball, it's going up, right? And it's getting to a point where you can predict these heat checks that are not very productive in the sense of an offense that you want to be consistently, or that you can believe in consistently. And so for a guy like Kyle Kuzma, it's great if he knocks down a three-pointer that was an inside-out pass, his shoulders were squared to the basket, and he knocks down a relatively easy basket, or he attacks a closeout and gets to the rim, and that's like he's taking nice, consistently productive shots. That's great. If he gets another one of those the next time down, awesome. That means the Lakers created two relatively easy shots on back-to-back possessions. But what you're starting to notice, or what I'm starting to notice, is he goes away, not necessarily goes away, but he forces a shot no matter how the defense gives him. So if he gets quote unquote hot, he does so off of a relatively easy look, right? But then next time he touches the ball and he tries to go one on two, one on three, and shoots like a step back mid-range pull up with a hand in his face, like that's not the shot that got him hot in the first place. And that's where I worry a little bit that he's forcing things to try to step into that role by trying to manufacture momentum, when really he's the kind of player who needs the game to come to him to a certain extent. So it's just something I've noticed. I hope that, you know, it's just a blip on the radar. In terms of the way that he builds his offensive game, and I hope it's something really that the coaching staff notices and nips in the bud as quickly as they possibly can. Just something that I'm a little concerned about. And the other thing too is the Lakers are struggling already to create shots. So on some level, it's kind of necessitated. Kuzma's bad habit here has been necessitated by the Lakers' inability to create shots that make more sense for him on a consistent basis, right? So if I was Kyle Kuzma and I heard me talking about myself in the way that I am right now, that's what I would point to, is that like, I'm doing whatever I can because I feel comfortable, I feel confident that I could create a shot for myself that the offense isn't creating for other guys on this roster or other guys that are on the court with me. And there's something to that. But I really do think that if Kyle Kuzma is going to be a consistently productive player, he has to be willing to trust the system and trust his teammates to create shots that got him hot in the first place on a more consistent basis than he's trusting them to do so right now. And the sooner that changes, the better I'll feel about him as a player. Because the other thing too is, like, he's had to force things with LeBron out. LeBron isn't going to be out forever, right? Hopefully speaking, I'll knock on wood here. But the idea is that if Kyle Kuzma builds these bad habits of forcing things every time he gets hot or every time he makes a shot, he is insistent upon forcing some type of heat check the next time down. Well, he's not going to be able to do that when LeBron James comes back, and the Lakers need somebody who just kind of slips into that role and takes what the offense gives him as LeBron creates it for him. So just a quick note there. I want to really quickly go back and talk a little bit about Brandon Ingram as the point guard here, because I think this is all kind of sort of tied. Look, one thing that I've noticed a ton, and I think this is as much a product of the injuries as anything else, but one thing that I just can't not notice over the course of a Laker game is how often on offense you have guys like waving to get to a certain spot, and none of it is particularly instinctual at this point. And given where the Lakers are this season, and even with all of the injuries that they've had, you'd like to see the offense work a little bit more, I guess, naturally, organically, right? Where as the ball moves, guys just move naturally into the spot that allows them to take advantage of said ball movement. And one thing that I notice a lot with Ingram in as he's tried to step back into this point guard role is he does a lot of that communicating even while guys are getting into the spot that he's telling them to get into. And it's very clear to me that the Lakers need somebody who is more of a natural point guard, because it's a different role. It's like, for some reason in sales, for example, in corporate America or corporations all over the place, if you're a good salesperson and you hit your numbers for years and years and years over a length of time, there's this idea that, okay, yeah, that person can just slide into a managerial role, right? Problem is, though, just because somebody is good at sales doesn't mean they're also therefore good at managing people. And what you wind up having is you have not just a potentially bad manager, but you also take a really good salesperson off of your sales floor. And it just makes for an unnatural fit all the way around. You look at what Brandon Ingram is asked to do. He showed a little bit of he was somewhat effective last year in a point guard role when there were no expectations for him. And the thinking is that, okay, yeah, he could just step back into that role. But what it's done is it makes him focus on way too broad a foundation of skills for himself as a player. But it also has kind of sort of excused poor roster makeup, right? Like, it makes no sense to me that if you're going to have Alex Caruso as your two-way player guy, as one of your two-way contracts, and he can't get into meaningful minutes when Lance Stephenson is your backup point guard because Rajon Rondo and Lonzo Ball are out, then just assign him permanently, him being Caruso, to the G League. Like, I don't think teams are falling over themselves to sign Alex Caruso off of your G League team. And, you know, what it kind of boils down to here with Caruso and with Ingram and with Rondo and Lonzo is the Lakers have thought that Ingram, who showed flashes of being able to do something, they thought that they could build off of that. They didn't make the situation such that he can continue to produce with the players around him, and they banked on him being able to produce to the point where they don't have somebody, just in case he isn't able to, they don't have somebody that they could lean on in the case that he isn't able to play point guard sufficiently, then that they don't have any options behind it, and it's just a disaster all the way around. And, you know, it's going to be interesting as we find out more about Lonzo Ball's injury and as we see how Rajon Rondo looks in coming back on Thursday. It's going to be interesting to see what the Lakers do with their trade deadline, given that there's a very obvious hole because of their point guard's inability to stay healthy, whether that's now Lonzo Ball or whether that was Rajon Rondo or has been Rajon Rondo over the course of this season. So they got some questions to answer as it pertains to point guard, and this is what, year... This is year two or three of those lingering questions. It's kind of a bummer. All right, I'm going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about something that I can't believe I'm still talking about in Ivica Zubac needing more minutes. All right, I am going to preface this by first apologizing to Ivica Zubac, whom I wasn't sure was an NBA player heading into this season. So, first off, kudos to Ivica Zubac for really turning around his career. So, with that said, I think what we're seeing right now is another instance in which politics in the locker room are impacting a decision that should be made, and it's those politics are precluding that choice or that decision from being made. And what you have is a couple veterans, JaVale McGee and Tyson Chandler, who, for whatever reason, have become increasingly ineffective over the course of the season. One stat that I think is particularly telling is JaVale McGee's block averages have gone down in each and every month so far this NBA season. That tells me, well, for one thing, it either signals a dip in energy, the energy that he plays with. I think he came out this season playing gangbusters and was contesting everything, and because of how athletic he is, if you contest something and you're as athletic as he is, your chances are you're probably going to impact the shot. What I've noticed more and more this year, as the year has gone along, is instead of going out and challenging everything the way that he was earlier in the year, he kind of sits back and stays near the basket so that, you know, he can kind of challenge but also stay in position so that he can get the rebound. And I don't know if it's impossible for me to say, quite frankly, if that's an attempt on his part to help his counting stats in terms of rebounds, or if that's something that the coaching staff was asking him to do because he is athletic and talented enough to be able to get those rebounds. But I don't know. He often, because of this strategy, he just puts himself in no man's land and doesn't really impact the shot, and also doesn't really put a body on anybody on the rebound, and it just doesn't work out very well for the Lakers. So that's been kind of a bummer to watch take place over the last month or so. And also, like, he has a very viable excuse or an explanation for why his energy has dipped, right? He had pneumonia. Like, pneumonia is, you ask anybody who's ever had it, and it is one of the worst experiences of their life. It's hard to breathe, you get sore, it's hard to move, it's hard to sleep, and not only is it tough in the moment while you're going through having pneumonia, but the recovery from it is usually a long and somewhat painful one as well, because apparently, my wife just told me this today, there's like scar tissue that builds up in your lungs that makes it even tougher to breathe as well. So, like, all the way around, I can understand why JaVale McGee has been mostly ineffective since he came down with pneumonia and was hospitalized with the pneumonia. And then for Tyson Chandler, like, he's just old. He's old. So for, you know, it makes sense that he isn't able to produce for 10 to 15 minutes a game. And what you have here is, you know, I think Tyson Chandler is probably best playing 10 or fewer minutes every game. I think until JaVale McGee is fully recovered from the pneumonia that he's been dealing with, that I don't think it makes sense for him to play much more than 15-ish minutes a game, so that he can get his legs back under him. And what that leaves is Ivica Zubac, who, by the way, has been good. And I think he needs to start, right? Like, it just makes sense that he needs to start. And so what I would like is for Luke Walton to kind of ignore the politics of the locker room here and make a decision that's actually best for the team. And as the Lakers get guys back who are good in the pick and roll, that's only going to make it more obvious the need to keep Zubac on the court because he's been so good at finishing in those pick and roll situations. Rajon Rondo and him were building chemistry. LeBron and Zubac were building chemistry right before LeBron went down. So I would like to see next game the Lakers start Ivica Zubac and I think manage Tyson Chandler and JaVale McGee's minutes a little bit more intelligently than they have been recently. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Just like I said, a few notes that I noticed over the course of the game and over the last couple days. Tomorrow's show, because it's in the middle of the doldrums of the NBA season, and because it is at this point, they have another day off. They aren't even practicing tomorrow, so Pete and I won't really have too much to talk about. But we'll find something fun to at least get us through a day of podcasting content. Also, I guess I should mention this because it's so pervasive. Melo, I don't think, is happening. Like, the Lakers have essentially leaked that they're concerned about his conditioning and they're concerned about how good he is as a basketball player. It doesn't matter how much pressure LeBron James puts on an organization. You don't leak that stuff. You don't leak those concerns about a player that you actually are seriously trying to acquire. And if you're concerned, like if you're unwilling to waive Lance Stephenson for Carmelo Anthony, that's also pretty symbolic of how they feel about Melo, not just as a player, but as a teammate as well. That's a major concern there. I don't see it happening. I'm not gonna jinx it. I'll knock on wood because I just don't think it makes any sense on any level. But that's my 2-minute spiel on Carmelo Anthony. Have a great rest of your day and make somebody else's.